plan on flying? In order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a real ID. Learn how to get your real ID today at tsa.gov/real ID or visit your local DMV.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Of all of the things that I managed to convince Jenny Vrentas to do this week on the Weekside podcast alongside me, Connor Orr, is the thing that she probably hates the most, which is talking about the Jaguars for 25 straight minutes. That's right. It is the special Jaguars edition. Yeah, of the Weekside podcast. I am noted Jaguars apologist Connor Orr alongside Jenny Vrentas. As always, we're recording this on Monday after the Jaguars released former number 4 overall pick Leonard Fournette. And I said, Jenny, scrap the program. We are devoting this entire half hour to the trendiest team in the NFL from 2013 to 2017. The team that all of the insiders told us was going to be the Super Bowl champions. They kind of got close. It was sort of one of those classic one-hit wonder Hollywood stories. Jenny, how excited are you to talk a little Jags football here?
Well, you know, today is as good a day as any, Connor, right? It makes sense. It's a little bit reminiscent of, I went back and looked up, in 2013 at the MMQB, we had a Jag week. There was a logo and all that we will share on the MMQB Instagram. It's actually a great logo. I can't say the same for the lineup of stories. I wrote a story for that week about Tim Tebow not abandoning his dream of becoming an NFL quarterback, but yet the sport of rugby was courting him. If you're wondering how this fits into Jag week, well, there was evidently at that time a plane flying over the stadium during a game with a Tebow Why Not banner in tow. At the time, of course, the Jaguars were 0-5. This was October of 2013. And then, of course, they made their dramatic turnaround. But Connor, the lineup of stories this week, really, really a low light for the MMQB, I have to say. There was spreading the wealth. Denver is an unprecedented 28-point favorite against Jacksonville, but smart money and NFL gambling history is on the underdog Jaguars. No, really. Then there was, it could be worse. When it comes to the lowlights of the NFL's past history, it doesn't get much lower than the 1976 Bucks. On the wrong side of the last mega spread, they can teach these Jags about what it's really like to be outmatched. Then we had the youth revolution, the Jags' dream draft. A lot of help is needed in Jacksonville, but with 10 picks in the next draft, the Jags can take a step forward if they follow this advice. Lastly, what ails them and maybe a cure? Analyzing the Jaguars in all phases, you see some slivers of hope, though maybe not for this week. So yes, Connor, this was really a moment in time, and I bring it up because I think you're about to make the point that what the Jaguars accomplished being minutes away from a Super Bowl was a peak in itself worth celebrating. And so I am highlighting this nadir to point out how far the Jaguars came to reach that peak, but yet now they are in another nadir.
So I wrote today on SI.com that I think if you were to go back to 2013, and I say that this started in 2013 because that's really when the Jaguars began to kickstart the rebuild in earnest. Shad Khan took over in 2012, stuck with Mike Mularkey for a year, and then brought in Dave Caldwell, Gus Bradley, and all that, and to try to kind of shift things there. So 2012 was sort of the end of the sort of lost in the woods Jaguars era, exclamated by the Justin Blackmon draft pick, which I think he was like sixth overall, seventh overall. He never really materialized there. And then came the rebuild. And that's, you know, and what I asked Jaguars fans in my column today is, if in 2013 we came to you and said, there's going to be six crappy years in here, but in one season, you're going to have an identity. You're going to have two star players that other people from other fan bases would recognize. And you're going to come within seconds of beating the Patriots to go to the Super Bowl. Would you take it? And that's all I'm asking, is to really sit back and consider that, given that, you know, there's Lions fans, there's Bills fans, there's fans of teams that have never made it this far. You are the Jaguars. Would you have taken that? And I'm wondering, you know, I'm curious what my response is going to be, because I think maybe you would have, right? I mean, before the rebuild started, you had your most popular players were a punter and a mascot. You know, so I don't know. I think that there were some good things that came out of this. Again, I'm a noted Jaguars apologist. I realize that. But I feel like it's not all like, let's just stomp on this team and laugh at them today. I think there were some good things that happened in these 6 years.
Well, relevancy is always better than the alternative. Well, in most cases, this is something I've been thinking a lot about lately. Maybe relevancy isn't all that important. But in general, in the NFL, if you're in the mix, it is better to be than not to be in the mix at all. But I was thinking about your point and hearkening back, as usual, to the Jets circa 2009, 2010. Would you say that Jets fans are satisfied by that? No, it was an exciting era. You know, Rex Ryan came in with a lot of energy. They rebuilt the team. They had this fantastic defense. They went to back-to-back AFC championship games. They had that thrilling win against Bill Belichick and Tom Brady in Foxborough in the divisional round. But ultimately, what came of it was just kind of a blip on the radar. It wasn't some lasting, you know, I don't know, it wasn't a championship. It wasn't something that is going to go down in the history books, Connor. It was kind of a fleeting, fun moment in time. And it's better that than the alternative. It's better that than the drudgery of losing season after losing season. But I don't know. Is there joy in coming close?
I think you and I started our training camp tour there the year after they lost to the Patriots. And I think at the time we were told that it was like the most well-attended training camp in recent memory, or at least maybe since they started as a franchise. If you remember correctly, that was during the time of the viral videos where there was the woman saying that the Jaguars could break the rules or
steal the show.
Yeah. So there was like, there's a lot of energy there. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, like, I just think, like, I picture being a Lions fan and not being able to feel any of that.
Right.
Since Barry Sanders was around. And mm-hmm. if you're the Jaguars, it's like, you know, if you have an understanding of who you are as a franchise, you're sort of an NFL outpost. You're not really expected to compete on a regular basis. That's just sort of like the vibe. The team is perpetually, you know, it seems like entertaining offers to move to a foreign country. So, that's who you are. And I felt like, you know, I'm not making excuses for anybody, but it's like, you know, that was pretty neat that you almost made the Super Bowl there. That was like a, what was that Premier League team that came out of nowhere and won the Premier League a couple years ago?
Really testing my lack of soccer knowledge here, Connor.
Yeah.
I think we discussed that on a previous podcast.
That classic soccer team. You know the one, Jenny.
Tottenham? Was it the Spurs? I don't know.
I don't think it was the Spurs. Okay. Leicester.
Oh, okay.
Was that it?
Leicester? I don't know. Is that how you say it? Really
we're
stumbling
get,
here.
We're
going to
get banged for this because our following is largely
we
international.
We definitely are going to. Yes, we do have a strong international following. But listen, it's an American football show, not international football. So that is not our area of expertise. It's okay that we have some blind spots there, Connor.
Yeah. And then Wikipedia puts the list backwards first. So it's not even like I can like bang up real quick. Leicester City.
Oh, right. See, I do remember watching this in the office, and Mark Moravec, the emeritus executive editor of the MMQB, who was also largely responsible for Jaguars Week, to really bring things full circle. I remember him watching this in the office and discussing how improbable this was.
Yes. The old foxes of Leicester City. How could we forget? So I don't know. I mean, maybe it's sort of like one of those things where all of a sudden you're relevant and you get a spotlight on your city and your town. And is that worthwhile? I mean, certainly it must have been for Shad Khan, because he kind of kept the core nucleus of that team around for a while, even after it was clear that, you know, that era is over, you know. And I think the releasing of Fournette today, yes, you still have Miles Jack, you still have Josh Allen, you still have some talented players on that roster, but it's pretty much over. I mean, you know, that Jaguars team as a contending entity that we know it is long gone.
Yeah, I mean, you just have a history of top picks that didn't work out. Blake Bortles at number three, Fournette at number four. You have the Yannick Ngakoue situation, where he took several million dollars less and has no tag clause to go to Minnesota, indicating how badly he wanted out, that he would take a far lesser amount to play just to play for a different team. So certainly what's going on in Jacksonville is kind of front and center. And that's why today was a good day for this breakdown, Connor.
So I'm going to pitch this question to you, and we'll kind of go back and forth here, but where do you think it all went wrong? Like, where do you think this whole thing kind of went off the rails in your mind?
Well, I think our colleague Albert Breer had a good point in that the shelf life of defenses, or the ability to keep a defense together when the defense is your core and what you're depending on to win a championship, it doesn't have the staying power that a quarterback coach relationship has. So, you know, we saw that in Seattle, I think, with the Legion of Boom, right? They were contenders for a few years, and then there was a fragmenting there. It's just difficult to keep so many pieces together when there's players on every level that are kind of coming together to make that work. So I think that's one factor, since the Jaguars defense was the center of those efforts and Blake Bortles was, you know, secondary. And then when you needed a little bit more from Blake Bortles, obviously it didn't work out. I will say that the noise that our producer Shelby played at the beginning of the show for Jags Week sound a little bit like the Nittany Lion roar. And that made me think of Paul Posluszny, who I think was a veteran leader on that team. And I think the departures. Yes. Come on, that is straight out of Happy Valley. Like, that is like, I love it. I love it. That reminds me of like Saturdays growing up when there was a football game on. And so, yeah, I mean, I think the loss of Posluszny, like sometimes you see locker room leaders leave and then the team kind of disintegrates. And I think he's representative of that, similar to what we saw with the Jets when that kind of some of those veteran leaders left a locker room like Damian Woody and LaDainian Tomlinson, and then the chemistry that is such a delicate mix sometimes anyway in NFL locker rooms just kind of didn't have the right mix of ingredients anymore. So I think those are two factors that I would say, Connor.
I would say too that there are a lot of parallels between that Jaguars team and the Jets teams that we covered. Most notably, you know, I think there's a Bortles and Sanchez sort of thing that goes hand in hand there. And there's the idea that Sanchez made it to a second contract, a pretty fairly lucrative second contract. And Blake Bortles did too. Blake Bortles got a second deal after that AFC championship run. At a time when everybody was like, I don't know, you know, maybe it's, you know, maybe you got to count your losses here and really go. But instead it was, let's push it even further. Let's go all in, let's go all in. You know, so it's kind of an interesting scenario there, but I don't know. To me, I think it's like, it's a weird thing where Tom Coughlin came in as the executive vice president during their best year. And then that's like, and then that's when everything started to fall apart. And, you know, you heard all the stuff about, you know, you and I both covered the Giants, the maniacal fining, the, you know, players getting fined for everything. And I think that that was just like, Tom Coughlin came at the right time for the Giants and he had success. And so he was able to maintain that program and those efforts. But to instill that as a new culture in today's NFL, I think is next to impossible. And had that team not had the successes they had, probably would have burned out even sooner than it did.
Yeah, I think it's also different when it's like an EVP of football operations role rather than a head coach. And it's also awkward when they're an EVP of football ops comes in and there's a GM in place. I feel like that dynamic makes it difficult as well. There's kind of a different groups or different ideas in the front office. And that is never a great mix. I mean, it's sort of similar, like the Dolphins, Mike Tannenbaum was an EVP of football operations when he came in there. And then you had Chris Greer as the GM under him. And then ultimately that, you know, they decided to just have the GM instead of two people who are sort of in that decision-making role.
Yeah, it was kind of an interesting time. I mean, was there ever a point throughout your tenure, I mean, obviously being on the ground floor of Jags Week, a lot to be said for that. Did you ever have Jaguars fever? And if so, could you describe the feeling?
I mean, I think Jags Week was a fun initiative to be a part of. I think that... I love it. Shelby on the spot. I love it. I think that the numbers that week sagged, but that's okay. You know, the Jaguars are a niche taste and you have to really want to be a part of it. And so we don't do things for the numbers here at the MMQB, Connor. You know, we thought there was a different goal of Jaguars Week and we really tried to lean into that goal. But I would say if you'd asked me that week if they would be in the AFC Championship game in a few short years and be close to beating Tom Brady and Bill Belichick in Foxborough, I would have said no. So in that respect, that is an achievement.
I remember getting Jaguars fever in London in 2015.
Ah.
I was covering the game out there. They're playing the Bills. They came from behind and they beat the Bills there. And, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, you're focusing on the NFL from a national perspective, and you really got to spend one week with the team again. You got to learn, you know, a little bit about how they came together. I met a bunch of great Jaguars fans out there, as they like to call themselves, and just kind of saw the whole thing organically. And at that point, I was like, you know, I'm all in on this. I think this is going to work. And I think it was fascinating because the team sort of pivoted so quickly. Like, you draft Blake Bortles. He has that weird 35 touchdown season, and then, you know, everything seems to be kind of going in the right direction, but then he regresses significantly. He's throwing those wounded duck passes again, and so you pivot, and it was such like a weird, interesting point in franchise history where you have the opportunity to draft Deshaun Watson or Patrick Mahomes, and instead you go with Leonard Fournette, and you're almost like, you know what, no, our defense is too good. We can just run the ball and we can be successful. And, you know, you wonder if they had that decision over to make over again, would they change their mind? And obviously, you know, of course, knowing what Patrick Mahomes has become and Deshaun Watson has become, it's sort of obvious. But back then, it's like, you know, does this make sense? Like, in what we knew about Watson and Mahomes back then, or should they have just pulled the trigger and gotten rid of Bortles at the time?
Right. And the obvious answer is yes. But you could also say that it's a quarterback's success is largely tied to who the head coach is and being in the right system and environment to develop. And I think Patrick Mahomes and Watson would have had success in any environment, but it might not be the same level of success that they're both having now.
Yeah, I think that that's like important to keep in mind, again, as a noted Jaguars apologist. But here's the interesting question is, where do you go from here? They're certainly in pole position for Trevor Lawrence. If Trevor Lawrence comes out, it's going to be fascinating to see if Trevor Lawrence wants to go there, if there is some sort of behind the scenes horseplay to get Trevor Lawrence the coach that he wants. You know, is that the kind of market he wants to play in? He's that kind of quarterback who can have those options and he has that kind of power. You know, do you, if you're Jacksonville, do you kind of stay on course here? I mean, I'm predicting all 256 games for the MMQB this week. I have the Jaguars going 1-15 this year, which I think is maybe generous, given kind of what the roster looks like right now. I mean, do you stay the course here and assume that you can entice Trevor Lawrence to go there and you kind of say, this is what we got to do? Or, I mean, I don't know. What is the future here in Jacksonville?
Yeah, I was actually about to ask you and put you on the spot as to what you picked for their record this year, but I don't think there's much debate that they are the favorite for the top quarterback. And then the questions come in similar to this year. Would Joe Burrow force his way out of Cincinnati? Obviously, he didn't, but it's a perennial question. It's a fair one to ask in an age when players are empowered, right? I mean, I think that's another factor to consider. Would someone be more likely to consider that route now? What's your pressure point, right? Like, do you use your sway to what end? And if you're the Jaguars and you have a chance of getting Trevor Lawrence or whoever you deem the top quarterback to be, do you want Doug Marrone to be the person developing him? And, you know, he's been the head coach there since 2017. He was the interim coach before that in 2016. But, you know, do you stay the course? Do you think he's had enough time to see where he can take this team? And do you just kind of want a fresh start with a new quarterback and a new head coach?
I think that's the move. Doug Marrone famously gave a speech at halftime of a Syracuse basketball game that I was attending. I don't think I was covering that day for the paper for the Daily Orange. And his big move was he had just been installed as the new head coach. And he took off his suit jacket and he spiked it on the floor of the court. And he was like getting everybody fired up, you know. And then he said, this is my dream job. This is the only job I've ever wanted and I will never leave. And everybody went nuts. And 3 years later, he was the head coach of the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, yeah. And there was the weird exit in Buffalo has never been fully explained.
So I think it's time for them to move forward. And here's the thing, like, I think the infrastructure there is so cool. I mean, you know, the Jaguars were among the first NFL teams to really do a full-throated embrace of analytics. This is a team that has found good players, and there's an evidence-based way to look at the way that they found some good players, either undrafted free agency or late in the draft, because of their makeup there. They've invested heavily in it. And I think that that's a good ownership group to play for. Like, Shad Khan and Tony are immensely patient. I mean, in order to give that last regime that they did basically 7 years to prove themselves, like, I think all that sets up as, like, this is a pretty good deal. Like, yeah, it sucks to have to go to London 3 or 4 times a year, and maybe that's where we end up permanently, which is always a concern, I guess, for somebody. But in terms of, like, the setup there, you're going to have a ton of draft picks, you're going to have a ton of cap space, and you're maybe going to have Trevor Lawrence. I mean, that's a good deal, I think, for a prospective head coach.
Yeah, and I think what you just said about them being able to find good players is important to the whole conversation of where do they go from here, because they have found good players, but they have either not utilized them the right way or not been able to retain those players. And I think that speaks to the coaching staff. So that is a reflection. This latest move with Fournette, like, how did it not work out? You know, and you could argue against taking a running back at number 4, which I think we would both argue against. But you also have to think about, like, why are they getting good players and it's just not working out with them, and this is not a place where they want to stay long term. And so I think that is more evidence for a coaching change.
Jenny, I remember you and I covering the 2017 NFL draft for competing outlets, but that didn't mean that we got to spend some time together at the lovely Park Restaurant in Philadelphia.
That's right.
The place to see and be seen. And leading up to that week, I mean, you know, it was like, I mean, Myles Garrett is obviously going number one overall, but that was one of the weirdest drafts in recent memory that I remember. I mean, so here's the top 10. There's a lot of players that I kind of even forgot about. I mean, Myles Garrett, Mitch Trubisky, and then Solomon Thomas at three, Leonard Fournette at four, Corey Davis at five, Jamal Adams at six, Mike Williams at seven to the Chargers, Christian McCaffrey at eight, John Ross at nine, and then Patrick Mahomes at 10. Super weird draft to begin with, but it's like, and I don't know if it's necessarily one of those that if you're a Jaguars fan, do you go back and you're like, outside of Patrick Mahomes, what person are you like, definitely we should have gotten instead of Leonard Fournette, and that would have changed things for us? I just don't know. I mean, maybe Christian McCaffrey, you could argue, was the better. I mean, you would be absolutely right in arguing that he is the better running back out of the two. Deshaun Watson, I don't know. I mean, but that certainly seems like the turning point there, where the Jaguars went from sort of ascending franchise to like missing maybe their greatest opportunity there.
Yeah, I mean, I think the mistake there was not saying now is the time to move on from Bortles, and potentially not seeing the transcendent talent in that class between Mahomes and Watson, which, to be fair, a lot of teams around the league did not see. Also, as you just read this off, and this has nothing to do with the Jaguars, but brutal year for drafting receiver in the top 10. Corey Davis, Mike Williams, and John Ross. Those are three tough top 10 picks.
Really, the first. So Corey Davis, Mike Williams, John Ross, Zay Jones, Curtis Samuel, Juju Smith-Schuster. So he was the first Pro Bowl wide receiver out of that class at pick 62, and he was 6th receiver taken. And then Cooper Kupp was a good pick, but then Taywan Taylor, Ardarius Stewart to the Jets, Carlos Henderson, but then two more Pro Bowlers, Chris Godwin and Kenny Galladay at the bottom of the third round there. Such a weird draft.
Yeah, a very weird draft. I think receiver is a difficult position to project, maybe now so more so than ever.
So, yeah, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to pull up the Jaguars schedule here. And I have them going 1-15 this year. I think I have them gutting out a little Minshew magic over the Bengals. Which shows a little bit of zero faith in Joe Burrow, which it's not meant to be intended that way. But I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. So, Colts at Titans, Dolphins at Bengals, at Texans, Lions at Chargers, Texans at Packers, Steelers, Browns at Vikings, Titans, Ravens, Bears, Colts at Colts.
Wow.
That's a brutal schedule.
That is a tough schedule. Yeah, I would say that the Bengals spot where you have them winning makes a lot of sense because, you know, they're playing against a rookie quarterback. If you had to guess another win, you're high on the Browns, but I don't know. There always seems to be some Browns chaos, so maybe there's a potential spot for a win there. You know, Titans are always one of those like weird teams, right? You know, you could just see them having like a weird win against the Titans or something along those lines. Who knows what kind of state the Bears will be in at week 16.
Also true.
But I think, you know, I think you're right. I mean, you don't look at that schedule and think like there's a lot of opportunities for wins here for the Jaguars.
I agree. My fantasy Jaguars scenario for the 2020 season, and I'll ask you to do the same, is again, I'm never advocating for anybody to lose their job. I think that's the crappiest thing that you could, like, when people predict hirings and firings and all that stuff, it's a lousy thing to do. But I'm going to turn this on its head and make it a comeback story. So if the Jaguars decide midstream to make a coaching change, it is a opportunity of a lifetime for the career regeneration of current Jaguars quarterbacks coach Ben McAdoo to make a reappearance on the national stage, lead the Jaguars to 8 straight wins, get Trevor Lawrence, and get a new lease on life down there in Jacksonville for Big Ben.
Connor, we usually save the Oracle for a Thursday episode, but this is sounding a lot like an Oracle to me.
More of a twisted Madden fantasy, you know.
Okay. Kind of thing. Okay. I would say that's more like interesting. It. Yeah. That is definitely intriguing. I mean, the other wild scenario is, like, you know, maybe they just rattle off six wins and don't get Trevor Lawrence.
I mean, that's what it, isn't that what we all thought about the Dolphins?
Right.
Know, was that,
right.
You know, this team is going to be so bad, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And then they end up winning five games, which I guess was excellent in the case of the Dolphins because you got who you wanted anyway.
Yeah.
Would be a complete disaster in the case mm-hmm. of the Jaguars. If they were somehow able to win three or four games, oh my goodness. And then you miss out on mm-hmm. the quarterback that everybody's been talking about for the last 4 years.
Yeah, but different situation because first-year head coach that somehow was able to come in and kind of convince guys, as difficult as the circumstances were, like, he got that team to play hard, to believe in what he was building, even if they couldn't see the results right away. Different situation, obviously, for a coach who's been there for several years. Connor, we cannot let the show end without shouting out one of our most loyal listeners, Anthony, who is a Jaguars fan and actually wrote yes. in and told us about a funny story. I don't know if I shared this on an earlier pod. I don't. But he was playing football in college and they had scouts come to the school for junior day so they could do prep for the next year and ask them some questions. He said his favorite team growing up was the Jaguars, and the scouts started laughing because he'd been an area scout for 12 years and never once had he heard someone say Jacksonville.
That's amazing.
So that's pretty good.
That's a great story.
Great story, yeah. So I wanted to make sure the show did not end without giving a shout out.
Speaking of the show end, if you guys are still here, thank you. And there's going to be some changes to the MMQB podcast feed coming up. The Weekside podcast will remain as it is. You know, we're not sure exactly what days of the week and all that kind of stuff. But the one thing that you can do to help us get off the ground is when we start kind of breaking off into our own feed. We're gonna have separate feeds now because you know, kind of give everybody a little bit more of a chance to pick what they want from the buffet line. But when we do, if you guys would do us a favor and leave a rating, review, comment, like it if you like the show. If you don't like the show, just do it anyway because it helps us out. And you know, in the law of the universe, we're all supposed to assist our fellow humans, and that would be great for us. So you know, just let us know what you like, what you don't like about everything, and what we can do better as we kind of get the show rolling on its own feed going forward. And we're excited. We have the best group of fans that we hear from all the time, and on Twitter, on Instagram, on our email at theweeksidepod@gmail.com. So we know you guys are coming with us. You know, we're not really going anywhere. It's just sort of like we're moving next door. But yeah, if there's anything that we can do better, worse, please let us know and leave a rating and review because it's going to help us a lot in our ability to kind of do more big, cool things with the show.
And Connor, you referenced the buffet line. I really hope that to our listeners, we are like the Taco Tuesday buffet that used to be part of our cafeteria in our old office, where even if you aren't in the mood for tacos or you're like, I can't do tacos again, you're just somehow drawn in every Tuesday. I would love for our show to play that role.
I know. Yeah, I would love for us to be the official taco smorgasbord of your football podcast listening. You know, that's all we could ever really ask for when we set out to do this a couple of years ago, Jenny.
We do talk about tacos a lot. Vegan taqueria. I mean, taco does seem to be the theme of our show. So
it does. Yeah. But thank you guys. And once again, thank you for sticking with us through the Connor Orr Passion Project Jaguars special edition podcast.
Thanks again for listening. The MMQB Weekside Podcast is me, Jenny Vrentis, and Connor Orr. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Moravik is emeritus executive director of the MMQB. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts by subscribing on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, as Connor alluded to, which is also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Finish your outdoor wood projects with Cabot Premium Wood Care Products. Australian Timber Oil is an exterior stain that provides maximum penetration, durability, and water repellency, making it ideal for decks, siding, outdoor furniture, and more. Save big money at Menards on Cabot Premium Wood Care Products. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Ready to roll into savings? Visit Dave Gill Chevrolet at 4700 East Broad Street in Columbus, your hometown Chevy experts. Right now, take advantage of tariff-busting deals on some of our most popular models. Experience the bold new 2025 Silverado 1500 with its powerful V8 engine and cutting-edge tech. Or discover the all-electric 2025 Chevy Equinox EV for an eco-friendly commute without compromising style or range. Looking for value? Browse our extensive inventory of certified pre-owned vehicles. From sporty coupes to family-friendly SUVs, each rigorously inspected for your peace of mind. Cruise over to Dave Gill Chevrolet or visit us online today at DaveGillChevy.com and drive home happy.